This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
We know that a lot of what's going on in the world right now sucks a lot. We know that there's nothing really to do besides sit around and listen to podcasts, so thank you for doing that. Like many of you, all I want to do is go to a bar. Maybe I'll make out with a stranger. Who knows? Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll talk a little too loud about the Mariners and accidentally invite a conversation with a random person who has no idea what they're talking about. Who knows? I just know that I miss that. So today we are going to try to recreate that as best as we can. And we want to remind you what it's like to saddle up to the bar, look the bartender dead in the eye, and order up an ice cold draft, baby. Today I am joined by the one and only Grant Bronsden, a.k.a. Bongos, a.k.a. Yale Earnhardt, to do a draft. Before we get into that, though, and explain what we'll be drafting, Grant, what did you think of my intro that I spent hours working on?
Big fan, although I thought you were going to say all you wanted to do is have some fun in honor of Sheryl Crow.
Well, that's a given. I mean, I think everything is kind of park adjusted right now. Like, what is fun when I can't do anything with other people? You know, like, obviously listening to Sheryl Crow is fun, making a podcast with you remotely and observing physical distancing is fun, but you know, my general idea of fun has been adjusted. I feel like we're playing in a very offensive, suppressing environment here when it comes to fun.
That's true, although the one constant I think in both of our lives is NCAA football 14.
I'm so glad you brought it up. Yes, I've been playing way too much. I have a 360, and I've never in my entire life had Xbox Live. So I thought about getting it right now, obviously, but then I was also like, eh. So I've just been playing the computer every time and absolutely murdering them. Like, I figured out how to play defense pretty effectively against the AI quarterback who can't do anything. So, yeah, I've been dominating. It's been a lot of fun. Really like that game, especially because it's recent enough that I remember a lot of the players. Like, every major team has a guy who's like in the NFL still, so it's fun to just like if it's a wide receiver especially, just I'm throwing you the ball 20 times and we're gonna throw a jump ball to you every time in the red zone and see what happens. So yes, I have been doing that a lot, as I know you have as well.
Oh yeah, it's all about creating the most dominant triple option offense possible, and that's basically what I've done, and that's how I end up winning, you know, four or five natties in a row, and then, you know, losing one and then repeating the cycle.
Congratulations. That's huge for us.
Thanks. I work very hard.
Wonderful. Well, we have more work for you today, Grant, as we are going to draft our own teams. We've done this in the past with just the best Mariner seasons ever. I'll link to that in the description here, but the past draft we did, which was in person, and I could see your beautiful face and see you be disappointed when I stole all the good players. That draft was designed to create the best possible teams we could of individual Mariner seasons. So I think it was like, you know, 1996 Ken Griffey and then 2001 Ichiro and things like that. Today we are not doing that. Today we are drafting teams of what I called glue guys or unsung heroes, or essentially guys who were not that really good, but we liked them a lot. This was inspired by an article that I wrote for Lookout Landing, which I would encourage you all to read because I know you're not doing anything else. It's the greatest unsung heroes in Mariner history, where I essentially did some research into guys who had really good seasons that no one ever talks about. And then I decided, you know what, this would actually make for a good podcast where we make entire teams of these guys. So the criteria for this draft is you can only draft a player once. So like if I were to take a player, Grant cannot then take them from a different year. You cannot draft anyone. So these are individual seasons too, if that wasn't clear. You're only drafting them for one particular year of their career. And in that year, they cannot have put up more than 2.9 WAR essentially. So 3 is the cutoff. If you're at 2.9 B WAR, you're eligible. If you're at 3, sorry, you're out. And that's pretty much the only rule. We're going to have an interesting look into what we consider glue guys, what kind of players that we like, because there are so many players, obviously, who fall into this category of decent but not that good in Mariner history. I know that Grant put in a lot of effort, I'm sure, to devise a draft strategy, which he probably will not tell me, but I'll figure it out along the way. Grant, how do you think we should determine who goes first here? We did rock, paper, scissors the last time, and that's going to be pretty hard since I can't see you right now. So do you have any ideas of how we can determine a fair order here?
Boy, man, you're putting me on the spot here. I feel like it needs to be some sort of, maybe who, when was the last time that you went to a live sporting event? And whoever has been to one more recently gets to pick first.
Oh, I love that. Okay, let me think. It honestly, I think we might be in trouble here because I think it was with you.
I think
it was that UW basketball game we went to.
Oh, you know what? I think you're right. I think it was a UW basketball game in one of the most ill-fated seasons in recent memory.
Yeah, I lost to the Cougs at home, and that guy from Wazoo said, "This is my city," which was hilarious. I don't know what else it could have been. Like, all the other things that I could have gone to essentially got canceled. So.
Well, I think, Matthew, you are the unsung hero having come up with this idea for a podcast. And your article, which mostly focused on players with 3 wins or more, and thus is full of players that are ineligible, was no help for my draft prep. So I think you should go first.
Okay. Thank you. I agree with all of that. We can do serpentine like we did last time, a snake draft where I'll go and then you take two. Otherwise, I feel like it would just be kind of unfair. So, all right. If you want me to go first, I will gladly go first. And thank you for shouting out the article. I will, like you said, some of those guys that I wrote about, or maybe all of them actually, were too good for this list, but shout out to my guys, Ed Vandenberg and Leon Roberts, the two guys during that process that I found that I had literally never heard of before. Both had great seasons once in their life and then never duplicated it ever again. I think we're going to have a lot of guys similar to that on here, but as I have the first pick, I think I want a premier position, but I'm trying to figure out which one. I think as far as positions go too, we can get pretty creative. Like, don't put a catcher in center field or anything, but any outfield position, I think, can play any outfield position, things like that. So I think I'm gonna do it. I might go with a surprising pick here. I think I'm gonna go with a catcher number one, and I'm gonna take one from the last season of Mariner history, maybe ever, and go 2019 Tom Murphy with my number one overall pick.
No, he was on my board, so I get the selection, but go ahead. I'd love to hear your little speech here.
So I think he's maybe the most glue guy out there, at least on my list. I mean, a lot of these guys, and we'll get into them as the draft unfolds, were like a little too good, I thought, to warrant the number one pick. In the spirit of the draft, I wanted the first pick to be a true glue guy, and I know that I can get some of the other players who were objectively better later on, but catcher is also kind of an interesting position, so I wanted to take the one that I really wanted. And Tom Murphy, he looks the part, which is to say he looks kind of weird, kind of a weirdo, doesn't have like a superstar face. And he slugged .535 last year. Did you know that? Like, I knew he had like a really good power season, but I didn't realize he slugged .535 as essentially a part-time catcher.
It's pretty incredible that he had 18 home runs and played 75 total games.
Exactly. And was a much better defender than Omar Narvaez, who was in consideration for me as well. But Murphy gets the edge because of his defense. He can pitch if need be. Also, this is going to be one game. It's not in a hypothetical situation for this. It'll be one game. I know we talked about perhaps simulating it on Out of the Park Baseball, and we could do a series for that, and we'll just have our one pitcher pitch every game, I guess. But in one game or whatever it ends up being, I want Tom Murphy in my dugout doing cartwheels after he unquestionably hits a home run. I also watched him play. Like, I remember this season, obviously, and there are a lot of guys on my list from the 70s and 80s who are kind of funny, who I also didn't really know anything about, but I don't have that personal connection. So Tom Murphy kind of checked all my boxes here, and I'm gonna take him off the board with the number one overall pick.
It's funny that you say your board has a lot of guys from the 70s and 80s, because I found that my board has a lot of guys from the 90s.
Interesting. See, this is our first dissension.
I think the first two picks off the board here, this is a very different draft than the last one that we did. The last one, we're just trying to prioritize the biggest gulf between option one and option two. So I believe one of the first people off the board, unsurprisingly, was A-Rod, because there weren't a whole lot of great shortstop seasons after A-Rod's, well, take your pick, 2000, 96, 90, like basically all the 90, late 90s, right? But here, where there's kind of this artificial cap that we've created, there's not that much difference between number one and number two at each position. So I'm going to go in the spirit of the glueiest glue guy out there, and I'm going to go for second baseman Joey Cora.
Okay, great pick. What year? I want to hear it from you.
In 1997, yep. Joey Cora managed to put up a 110 OPS plus, so he's 10% better than league average. He hit 300, he had 11 home runs, he played in 149 games, and he was Joey Cora. I feel like Joey Cora is the epitome of a glue guy. And so I'm very excited to welcome Joey onto the Seattle Grants. We're going to be very happy to have him.
Yeah, I think he's a great addition to any team. That was like...
The next...
I just want to chime in. That was an insane Joey Cora year because it was also the last full season of his career, and he hit 11 home runs and made the All-Star team as a guy who, like, is most known for drag bunting. Like, what a breakout for Joey Cora at age 30-something.
Yeah, I got to say, there's a bit of a theme when I was looking at players that to consider at each position. There's a theme of players that within a year or two of this season just fell completely off a cliff. I thought that was especially true at first base. I loved having Joey see the little power outburst where he had, slugged like 369 for his career and managed to slug 441 his age 32 season, and then was out, a year later.
Yeah. Great pick. Who do you want with your second pick?
Yeah, my second pick, I'm again going to stick with the spirit of the glue guys, but I'm also going to go with somebody who, by a like just production per game perspective, was especially strong. And I'm going to take Stan Javier's 2001 season.
Damn it!
To me, Stan Javier is also the epitome of a glue guy, but in his case, he has a nice long career where he bounces around from the Yankees, to Oakland, to the Dodgers, to the Phillies, to the Angels, back to Oakland, to the Giants, to Houston, and then winds up with two last seasons in Seattle. And in 2001, a magical season by all accounts, he puts up his second best OPS plus of his career. He hits 292, he walks a lot and gets on base to the tune of a 375 on base percentage, and is worth 2.8 wins while playing across every outfield position and even at first base as well. And puts up 2.8 WAR, so feels like exactly what you want: the positional versatility, the random age 37 season, and he never played another major league game after 2001, which I'm not really sure how that's possible given how good he was in 01. But that's my pick, and I'm sticking to it.
It's a smart pick, Grant. That was going to be my very next pick. I did not realize how good Stan Javier was that year because he didn't play very much, like you said, but legitimately very productive in, like you said, the last time he ever played Major League Baseball. He probably thought that the Mariners were going to win the World Series and had this whole plan to just retire after that. And then when they didn't, he was like, well, I'm still going to retire.
I also thought it was crazy looking at it as numbers. I mean, he was a very good base stealer in the pros. He had one season with Oakland where he stole 36 bases and was caught only 5 times. But just looking at his minor league numbers, I mean, he stole 61 bases one year in Double A. So, he was still stealing bases at age 37 and doing it pretty successfully. He was 11 for 12. And there are a lot of guys I looked at. I'll give you a spoiler. One of them I considered was Harold Reynolds. And I love Harold Reynolds. But the fact that he one year had 35 steals and was caught 29 times. I respect a guy that's able to steal bases efficiently and not just go for quantity over quality.
Yeah, I think that's a fun part of doing this too, is applying modern thinking to guys who were playing 30, 20, whatever years ago, where all they cared about was yep. batting average and counting stats. So yeah, great pick. Like I said, was going to be my very next pick because Stan Javier, again, a guy that I remember watching and remember liking. So that was part of it, and also just was very good that year. You don't have to make a decision yet, but do you have an idea what position you want Stan Javier at, just so I can put it down in my notes?
Yeah, I think I'm going to put him in left field.
Okay.
That seems to be a pretty much a black hole across Mariners history, so I'll stick him in the corner there.
Okay, makes sense. For my next pick, I'm also going to take a corner outfielder. I'm going to take kind of a best available situation, a guy who was right there on the cutoff. He had 2.9 BWAR in 1982. I'm going to take for my right fielder, Mr. Al Cowens. Do you know anything about Al Cowens?
I know that he was on my list of players to maybe take.
Yeah, that's about where I'm at too. I looked him up while I was doing this because he came up, you know, in my little search for 2.9 and under. He was at the very top of the list, and a pretty productive offensive player, gotta say. Like, he had of the guys on my list, I think he might have had the most like legitimate season. You know, he hit 270, 325, 475, 20 dingers, 113 OPS plus. That's a good season. And playing for the 82 Mariners, who didn't have a whole lot else going for them. I know that doesn't matter here, but like, gotta respect that Al Cowens put his best foot forward when, you know, the team was not very good and didn't have a whole lot of interest around them. Also, for those listeners at home, this is not Al Cowlings, OJ's friend who was driving the white Bronco. That is a different guy. This is Al Cowens, the baseball player, who, as far as we know, was not involved in any sort of police chase.
Although he was involved in a pretty notable incident, according to his Wikipedia page, which I have just opened now. I don't know if you're aware of this or want to talk about it at all.
No, I'm completely unaware. I didn't want to learn anything personally about my players. I'm the New England Patriots of this draft.
Well, on his Wikipedia page, there's a subhead for farmer incidents, which unfortunately is not a section about, you know, fights he's gotten into with actual farmers, but with pitcher Ed Farmer. So Ed Farmer, in 1979, a couple years before his, you know, incredibly gluey season for the Mariners, Ed Farmer threw a pitch and fractured his jaw and broke several teeth. Farmer later said that Cowens had attempted to steal signs and thought the pitch would be a breaking ball away, but it was actually an inside fastball. So, you know, obviously that caused a little bit of animosity. The next season, 1980, they faced each other again, and Cowens hits a ground ball to shortstop. But instead of running to first base like one does when one hits the ball in the field of play, he runs to the mound while Farmer is watching the ball hit to the shortstop, tackles the pitcher from behind, and lands several punches before the bench is clear.
Oh my God. Welcome to the team, Al Cowens. I love that. I should have taken him 1-1 if I had known that.
Yeah, and the best part, I think, is that Farmer actually filed a criminal complaint but ended up dropping the charges in exchange for a handshake, which happened in September.
Wow, what a story. Yeah, I didn't know any of this. I didn't even know who Al Cowens was until about 24 hours ago.
This guy will absolutely keep team morale very high. He will stick up for you. I like the pick. I like the team chemistry selection here. I think you're making a very smart move, even if unintentionally smart.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'm building a strong team here. And I've gone mostly offense. I don't know about Al Cowens' defense, but, you know, I'm going to assume average at best. Same kind of for Tom Murphy. He's fine behind the plate. But I picked them mostly for their bats. Now I want to take someone for their glove. I want to take someone who is actually a very good baseball player, who had a great career. Not particularly in this season, especially offensively, but his glove was amazing. I am going to take, with my next pick, 1993 Omar Vizquel to man shortstop for Team Matthew.
Yeah, he was on my list. There's one flaw in his game, but I'll let you go ahead and talk about the things that you like.
Yeah, well, I think his flaw is hitting anything but singles. He had the rare slugging percentage under his on-base percentage. He slugged .298 for a full season. That's got to be pretty hard to do. Like, that means that you have no ability at all to hit the ball in the gaps or do anything to get the ball over anyone's head. Like, I'm assuming he mostly was just slapping singles or bunting or whatever. He wasn't walking very much either, so just a lot of singles for Omar, and then playing otherworldly defense, obviously.
I think the best way to emphasize how good his defense is, he was worth 2.6 wins above replacement, despite the fact that his OPS plus was 33% below league average at 67. And on the base paths, he was caught stealing more times than he successfully stole bases. He had 12 steals and 14 caught stealing.
Yeah, that was pretty common, I learned, especially in the olden days.
It's shocking. You'd think they'd realize, you know, if you're getting caught more often than not, or even close to as much, then maybe you should just do it less, and you're not actually that fast. But I guess that's a lesson that, you know, no one really knew in the 80s, and then suddenly figured out in, like, the 90s or 2000s or something.
Yeah, well, on my team, we're probably not going to run that much, although if anyone will, it's going to be Omar Vizquel, I guess. We'll figure it out. He had a WRC plus at 69 also, which played into my decision. I want that on my team. Yeah, exactly. Like, tough to pass up, and I can't imagine that anything is going to get past him, because this is not only one of the better defensive shortstops ever, but also him at his most athletic, I feel like, you know, like before age starts to get to his knees and his range. So he's at the top of his defensive game here. And for that, maybe I'm reaching a little bit with my third pick, but I want some defense here, so I'm going to take Omar. And now it is back to you for your next two picks.
Nope. I think that's a good selection. He was definitely high on my list. But I think given the positions you've taken and the position still on the board, I'm going to go with a third baseman. And there were two seasons of Kyle Seager's that I considered. Interestingly enough, they are kind of the more or less the bookends of his career. He had exactly 2.8 wins above replacement in both his first full season in 2012 and last year in 2019. And although he only played in 106 games last year, which theoretically meant he has more value per game, I'm going to go with 2012 Kyle Seager, because I'd rather have that, you know, young, hungry to prove it up-and-comer rather than the veteran who's earned that big contract. So we're going to go with 2012 Kyle Seager, who managed to put up a 108 OPS plus, 20 home runs, played great defense, and was obviously a very gluey member of the 2012 Mariners.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard to be a glue guy when you're making $100 million. 2012 Kyle was making peanuts, I would assume, at least for big league standards.
Yeah, $500,000 a year. It's really just not enough money to keep you motivated. You got to make more than that.
Exactly. You light the fire under someone's ass by only giving them $500,000 a year.
All right, I'm catching up on filling out my lineup card with your picks included. So just give me a second here as I catch up. All right. So,
no, I love it. I'm strategizing.
My next pick, I'm going to go with a pitcher.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think it's time to dip into the world of the mound. There are two pitching seasons that I'm considering for my starting pitcher, and both are in the 21st century. So I think I'm going to go with the 2018 version of Marco Gonzalez.
All right. Yeah, makes sense.
And I think there's a couple things that Marco provides that are really going to be appreciated on the Seattle Grants. For starters, the fact that he's a local guy and you know, went to college in the state of Washington and really has some familiarity with the area, I think will really help keep the team grounded and he'll be, you know, he'll know all the spots to go on fun outings once, you know, social distancing is no longer a thing. I appreciated the fact that he was able to, you know, be pretty durable, you know, made 29 starts, pretty solid. And I also think, you know, obviously the ERA of 4, the slightly above league average ERA plus, these are you know, pretty good things, especially in a more offense happy era. But the fact that his dog Louie is so cute, I think really is the kind of thing that makes a glue guy a glue guy and not just a fine player. So that's why I'm going to go with Marco Gonzalez.
Yeah, all that makes sense to me. I think too, I mean, we're obviously sort of blinded by recency bias here, but his ability to galvanize an entire city has been inspiring. He's been doing all these coronavirus PSAs with the aforementioned dog Louie, who's getting a lot of screen time right now. And yeah, I feel like I trust Marco, especially on the mound, but, you know, now also during a global pandemic. And you can never have too much security against global pandemics on your baseball team. I think we've often said this, and now it's coming to fruition.
We've actually already hired Dr. Fauci as a consultant for the Seattle Grant. So he and Marco are going to be working together to devise a pandemic readiness plan going forward for any future viruses that may occur.
Damn, I did not take doctors into consideration here. That's going to be a huge advantage for your team. You found the market inefficiency already in the medical profession.
Call me the glue guy, Moneyball 2020.
It's a little wordy. You might have to cut that down, but we'll figure something out. We're all going to have our reputations after this for team building, and you can be whatever that was that you just said.
sounds good. All right, Matthew, I yield my time. Let's hear it.
Okay, yeah. So for my next two picks, I'm definitely taking two positions that you don't have yet because I want to block you from getting these guys. I'll start with my first baseman. Going to take another power threat from my middle of the lineup. I'm going to take a guy who just hit the shit out of the ball at a time when the Mariners were famously doing the opposite. I'm going to take 2009 Russell Branyan. There was another first baseman who was, you know, right there in consideration. You could argue that Branyan had a little bit of a better season, at least by some metrics like slugging, WRC+, things like that. The other guy, though, a little more name recognition, kind of more of a household name, which is fine. Like we said, there's no rules here. But in the spirit of what I'm trying to build, I want Russell Branyan, who kind of was a cult hero when he was here, because, like I said, he was the only person who could hit the ball for any kind of power in that era for the Mariners. He really just had the perfect Mariner season of hitting 31 homers with only 76 RBI. That seems kind of difficult to do. I assume a lot of those homers were solo homers. And yeah, 2.6 B war, like pretty respectable for a guy who's all offense and especially all power. Not really a huge on base guy, although he was fine, 347 on base percentage. And I liked him. I remember thinking that it was cool that we had a guy who was like a cartoon character almost, who just was only interested in hitting homers, very beer league softball approach. And I think that's a great quality in a glue guy. So I'm adding 2009 Russell Branyan to likely be my cleanup hitter and penciling him in for at least 47 home runs in this one game that we play.
Yeah, I like the beer league softball category. I think you do need the guy that's either out of shape or just, you know, kind of cartoonish with accentuated features in one area or another. I think that's a really important thing. I'm not sure if I've got that. So that's definitely an area to shore up in the rounds to come.
Yeah, and we're kind of alternating here, or at least I am, in terms of like offense, defense, you know, trying to build a well-rounded team. So Russell is obviously the offense, and that prevents you from getting him. So now I'm going to move back to defense. I'm going to take my center fielder, and I'm going to take, I believe, the only guy so far. Oh, I know, never mind. I had Seager in the last draft. I was going to say, maybe the only guy who's going to appear on both the glue guy team and the best Mariners of all time team. But you already got Seager, so that's actually not the case anymore. But anyway, I'm going to take, for my center fielder, the one and only Franklin Gutierrez, specifically from 2010, where he only put up 2.2 B-war, but was still one of the better defensive center fielders in the game.
I like that pick, Matthew. I respect that.
Thank you. Yeah, I think also, you know, I said earlier that Tom Murphy kind of has the look of a glue guy, kind of a weird looking scruffy dude. Franklin Gutierrez, pretty much the opposite of that. Very good looking, could throw off your team because they're going to say, whoa, 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 who's this guy who's actually very beautiful? I thought we were sort of an island of misfit toys situation. So I think it could be kind of disarming too, which is, you know, I'm taking any advantage I can get here.
It's funny, I would think it would actually do the opposite and actually sow seeds of discord within your team because they'd be so jealous of this incredibly handsome man and wondering why you decided to bring him on. So I might actually go the other way and question whether it's going to be self-destructive, really.
That's a good point, I guess. There could be some resentment. People do tend to throw rocks at hot people. I've said this for many years. But, you know, I think we're trying to win games here. I'm not trying to build friendships. Also, 25 stolen bases. I don't have his caught stealing number in front of me. I know that was kind of a an area of hilarity in some of our past picks, but I'll take 25 steals. That's pretty good. He only hit 245, but again, mostly for his defense and his speed. Probably be a bottom of the order guy, and just him with Vizquel up the middle. I'm taking two premier defenders with my early picks here, and I'm happy with how my team is rounding out with power at the corners and defense up the middle.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think it's time for me to add some more power to bring in the Joey Coras and Stan Javiers of the world. So I'm going to go with the right fielder, the famous Jay Buhner from 1994.
Okay.
I think Jay was very good in 94. He played only 101 games, but had an OPS plus of 138, slugging percentage of 542. 21 home runs. I also think he had a good number of almost three-win seasons. So, you know, he had some very good seasons in there too, but more often than not, he was the glue guy. You know, he was the forgotten man among four of the very best players to ever play their positions in the, you know, Randy, A-Rod, Edgar, and Junior era of the Mariners. So I think he'll you know, the underappreciated vibe will help with the rest of the glue guy team here.
Yeah, absolutely. In trying to craft my draft board here, I was doing a lot of Jay Buhner research, and I didn't realize, like, I think I thought because of his position in Mariner history that he was actually better than he was, but he was kind of a glue guy. He was right around three wins every year, only made one All-Star team, which I was surprised by because he was on, like, a good nationally recognized team for most of his career, and he was hitting, like, 40 homers when that was a time that, like, that's all that voters really cared about. I found out that in 95, he finished fifth in MVP voting despite only having 2.4 wins above replacement, which is hilarious to me. I know you took him in 94, but the finishing fifth in MVP when only having 2.4 wins above replacement is very funny to me. So I wanted to point that out.
Yeah. Maybe I should have gone for the guy who is extra valuable to according to the nation's sports writers. Maybe that was actually the real player to take here.
Maybe this will come back to bite you. But you do also take, because I had 94 Buhner on my list, so you now prevent me from taking him, who I was probably going to have as my DH. But you can have 94 Buhner and all of the baldness that comes with him. That's, you know, we have a lot of interesting aesthetics here now, too, with, you know, I have Goody, you have Jay Buhner, Joey Cora, who is like 5'4". I have Russell Branyon, who is a lumberjack. A lot of nice contrast here.
We do, and I'm going to add another contrast, although it's not going to be in terms of the looks. It's going to be in terms of his personality, and that is going to be a throwback to 1980 when Bruce Bochy was a stud for the Seattle Mariners. And I'm going to draft him actually not as a first baseman, which he played, but as my DH. And I think he's going to slot in very nicely at DH. How much do you know about Bruce Bochy, the man, the myth, the legend?
So, yeah, he occupies a very interesting place in my brain because I've seen his name so many times, you know, on Lookout Landing, whenever I do any sort of research on best Mariner seasons. You know, he is one of, I think, unquestionably the best players from the first 10 years of Mariner history, but I know nothing about him to the point that if I were to have picked him, I would have been questioning the pronunciation of his name because I've only ever really seen it in writing.
This is definitely a case where I forged ahead with confidence rather than pretend like, or rather than acknowledge that I don't know how to say his name. I really just guessed. But he was a decent player. He had a good run with the Mariners from 78 to 82. He did not play baseball in 1983, and, you know, he actually refuses to discuss his reasons for leaving the game. He says, "It's too complicated to explain in a couple of paragraphs. Everyone who's written about it so far has messed it up," but he insists it was the right move for him. After that, you know, year-long sabbatical, he came back and played three more seasons as a full-time player for the Athletics. But he's also done some other interesting things with his life. And I just Googled him a little bit because I wanted to, you know a little more about him. He was invited to the 2001 All-Star game because, like you said, he was one of the you know, prime Mariners of the early runs. And he declined going basically because he didn't want to go. He more or less told the LA Times, like, yeah, I'm not interested in going. After he retired, he lives on Whidbey Island, actually, and he helped restore a coho run at on a creek on Whidbey Island. He apparently spent much of the 1990s working at the Center for the Story of the Universe, which is a research affiliate of the California Institute of Integral Studies in San Francisco, which emphasizes higher education for the mind, body, and spirit.
Wow. So it sounds like this is kind of, you know, the Mariner's Bill Walton, Bill Lee, spaceman kind of guy, where he has a lot of interests that are not baseball, to the point that he would both quit and not tell anyone why, and also turn down an opportunity to be recognized in front of thousands of people. I respect that a lot. I didn't know anything about him off the field, especially. So this was great. And you know, I have a lot of respect for Salmon too. So he's really helping out in a lot of communities that I respect.
It's funny that you reference Spaceman Lee, because the PI article that I read, actually, he literally said, you know, I'm always walking a fine edge between conveying that I'm doing something substantial and solid and being like Bill Lee. I'm hoping to not end up in the category of spaceman.
Oh, wow. Shots fired at Bill Lee.
Yeah. So this cosmology student, as he would describe himself, is not actually as crazy or as off the edge as Spaceman Lee. He is just doing his own thing, studying the role of human beings and their relationship with Earth, as well as the survival plan that the human species needs to come up with for Earth and its environment.
Dang. Well, you definitely have the advantage in galaxy brain opinions here. I'm not going to be able to compete with you. It sounds like Bruce Bochy is operating on a completely different plane than most of my players, and I'm just going to have to deal with that.
He is, but he's also actually a good hitter. So I like that he hit 300. He walked a lot. He is going to provide some good offense, and hopefully I can address some defense at first base with a later pick.
Yeah, you do have a very offensive team here, which is, you know, I think that's a one way to build a team. But I'm trying to combat that by just catching everything in sight. So I like the way this is playing out, and I like your Bruce Bochy pick, especially at DH, where he doesn't have to do anything that requires too much thinking. So I think when you're standing out in the field for too long like that, it's easy to get distracted. And if you have a mind like Bruce Bochy's, who knows where it's going to end up, you know?
Smart. That's very smart, Matthew. I appreciate you thinking ahead. It's clear that you work very hard.
I sure do. Okay, it's my turn now, right? I get my two picks. Did you got Buehner and Bochy in that?
Absolutely. It's all you.
Okay. So then the only position left that neither of us have drafted, and in turn means that I need to block you from getting someone, is relief pitcher. So we're doing all nine offensive positions and a starting pitcher and a relief pitcher. And in order for Grant to not take the one guy that I really want, I'm going to have to take, for my relief pitcher, none other than 2001 Arthur Rhodes. He was very good. Just a very good relief pitcher that year. In fact, pretty dominant. He had a relief pitchers are kind of weird for this stat, but he had a 2.41 ERA plus, which I thought might have been a mistake before I realized that Baseball Reference doesn't really make mistakes. That is wild. He also 2.5 BWAR for a middle reliever, pretty insane. A WHIP under 1 at 0.85. And of course, my favorite anecdote, he tried to fight Omar Vizquel, who is also on my team, in the name of jewelry. That was the most famous moment, I think, in Arthur Rhodes' Mariner career, besides giving up that home run to David Justice in the playoffs, was Omar Vizquel trying to get him to take his earring out, and Arthur Rhodes instead saying, "No, I would like to fight you instead." So I want that on my team. I think in a relief pitcher, you need that kind of fire, and hopefully he can patch things up with Omar Vizquel from the past before they have any sort of run-in. It's going to be like a weird Back to the Future situation where if they don't fight, maybe Arthur Rhodes starts to fade away in all pictures or something like that. But I can't pass up the opportunity to take him with this pick, especially because that was the only one that you haven't taken yet that I needed. So Arthur Rhodes and his 83 strikeouts to 12 walks in 68 innings are joining my team. And he's probably going to pitch like three innings at the end of the game here. So now that I have that, I'm in a tough spot. I think I have to go best available again because I don't need to worry about positions, although there are some guys that I guess you could take to fill a few spots here. And I think along that line of thinking, I am going to play defense. I'm going to take a shortstop to play third base so that you can't put him as your shortstop. And I'm going to take 2003 Carlos Guillen. Yeah.
Okay.
Carlos Guillen, in the very last year before he goes to Detroit and becomes an actual all-star, 2003 Mariners, he was the shortstop, but according to Baseball Reference, did get 32 starts at third base as well, so he's familiar with the position. 2.5 BWAR, pretty solid. I mean, I think he'll be above average at third. I remember him being an okay defender at short, so I feel like that'll translate. And, you know, he hit 276, 359. Not any power, but he'll probably hit second for me, you know, get on base, do some stuff, move some people around. And, yeah, I mean, there's not a sexy pick at all, like most of these guys are going to be towards the end of the draft. But I just didn't want you to take him to play shortstop either. So Carlos Guillen is going to move over one spot and play third for Team Matthew.
Yeah, no, I like that pick. And I like that you took someone that at least played a lot of third base later in their career. So they were, like you said, familiar with the position, and it's not too much of a stretch. So I respect that.
Thank you. Apart from trying to build a good team, I was trying to just get your respect out of this. So it seems like I've accomplished both of them with that last pick.
you already had it, but you really cemented your reputation in just there.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, then, with Rhodes and Carlos Guillen, two heroes of the early 2000s off the board, it is back to you for your next two picks.
All right. Well, I think it's time for me to shore up the catching position. And for that, we're going back to the 90s, and it's time to add Dan Wilson to the club. So let's address that defense and bring on Dan the Man in his 1995 season, where he put up 2.4 wins, was a slightly below average hitter, but you know, provided the kind of clubhouse leadership and pitching guidance that that every pitcher will need from their backstop. So I think we're going to be happy to have him, and the Dan Wilson-Marco Gonzalez combination is really just going to blow people out of the water. I think they'll be miles ahead of everybody. So I'm happy to have him.
Yeah, you get a lot of kindness there, too. Like, with that battery, Marco and Dan Wilson, I feel like you just have two really good guys, which is, you know, that's something. I think people will like being around them in your clubhouse. And I was curious to see, because catcher is such a limited position, if you were going to go Dan Wilson or maybe 2006 Kenji Jojima. Those were really the only two options, I feel like, unless you wanted to take a true rando or Narvaez, too. But
those were the two options that I had on my board behind Tom Murphy, so... you called it. Those were really the only other people I considered. Again, like left field, catcher is a bit of a wasteland in this area.
Yeah, Jojima was on my team for the last draft, where again we were trying to draft the best possible teams without any restrictions, and Kenji Jojima falls into both categories of one of the best ever in Mariners history and just kind of an okay role player.
I think it's going along with among the best in Mariners history. We're going to go to first base, and we're going to take John Olerud and add some defense as well as some veteran leadership. And his 2003 season, I think he was just above league average as a hitter, walked a lot, great defense, maybe past his prime when he was really dominating for the Mariners in 2001. But I think he's still a good addition and definitely plays better defense than the other options, which included people like Kendrys Morales, who I just refused to take on principle.
Yeah. When you, for the listeners, when you do the search for, you know, Mariners season 2.9 or under at first base, Kendrys Morales is objectively the best option. But I had the same reaction to you where I recoiled from my computer when I saw that and thought, there's no way I can take Kendrys Morales for this team because I think he will be sort of a clubhouse cancer, if you will, and sort of make things worse as opposed to better. So, yeah, great pick avoiding Kendrys and instead getting John Olerud, who will, I think, be the opposite in terms of morale.
Yep, and I did consider Mr. Mariner, Alvin Davis, but quite honestly, like, I just didn't grow up watching him play. I'm not as familiar with him. I know John Olerud. I know he's going to be that great defensive presence at first, and since I've already filled up that DH position, I wanted to go with stronger defense to help with my, slightly more defensively challenged, offensively inclined starting nine.
Yeah, I thought you might have maybe gone Richie Sexton too. He had a couple of years that qualified, but Olerud is definitely the better at first base in terms of defense. So
06 Richie Sexton was great. He was also very, very bad the next year and then basically done with baseball. So thought about it, but decided to go with Olerud instead.
Can't argue with that logic. Okay, so that leaves me needing four positions, all of which you have already taken, so I can kind of have some fun here. I think I want to take a personal choice, a guy that, like you said, with Olerud, that I remember watching and that I think might be the Mariners' all-time glue guy, because he like was here, then he left, and then he came back. You know, he was on the team like three different times, and each time seemed very beloved and welcomed by the fans.
Yep.
I will say I don't want him anywhere near the outfield with his glove, so he's going to be my DH, and I'm of course talking about Raul Ibanez, who is going to be my designated hitter from 2008 specifically. This is the end of his second stint in Seattle. Someone has to take Raul for this draft. I mean, he is he was close to being a superstar, but not quite. There were definitely years where he was the best offensive player on the Mariners, but his atrocious defense undid a lot of that, which is the reason why he was only at 2.7 WAR for this year. Really the perfect DH. 110 RBI in this year that I'm taking him in 08. Slugged 479, got on base at a good clip, 358. And like I said, I don't have to worry about him ever touching his glove. He's just going to be the DH and be able to hit dingers. So Raul Ibanez and all of his tremendous amount of chewing tobacco are part of my squad.
So I've got two picks here, and I only have a couple positions left that need to be filled. And I think we're going to start off with reliever, because I think there were, to me, two solid options, and you actually chose neither of them.
Oh.
So I feel pretty good about who I've got on the board here. The decision for me came down to either 1995 Jeff Nelson or 2006 J.J. Putz. And, you know, I think it's tough. I think you can make a good case for both of them. They were both very, very dominant. But I think because we were able to trade J.J. as part of the deal that, you know, became Franklin Gutierrez, among others, I think I'm going to go with that season. So in the 2000 and let's see, what would it be? To the 2006 season, so before he became otherworldly in 07, J.J. Putz was really dang good. He was had a 2.30 ERA. His FIP, so fielding independent pitching, which is on the same scale as ERA, was down to a 1.73. So he was especially strong. And he had 104 strikeouts in just 78 innings. So I thought that 104-13 strikeout-to-walk ratio was impressive enough that I'd love to mix up the hitters that have Marco Gonzalez early on, the soft-throwing lefty, into the hard-throwing righty.
That makes sense. If I hadn't gotten Omar Vizquel, I probably wouldn't have taken Arthur Rhodes, but I just wanted that dynamic of two guys who yelled at each other once on the field. But you're right. J.J. Putz and Jeff Nelson from those two seasons you mentioned, I think by wins above replacement at least, are the best options for this draft. But I went heart over head in my bullpen and took Arthur Rhodes. But J.J. Putz, you're right. Was he the closer in 2006, or was that before they even made him the full closer?
He was the closer that year. He had 36 saves, so he was still he had moved into the full time closing role. It was the next year where he not only was an All Star but actually received MVP votes, which I find to be pretty damn funny.
Right, and great name. J.J. Putz is an A1 glue guy name. He doesn't sound like a real person with a name like that. But to find out that he was also dominant in terms
of that red facial hair patch is pretty great too.
Yeah, I guess the combination of all those things, his name, his look, and then actually being way better than I think anyone thought he would be, makes him really a consummate glue guy and a relief pitcher too, the glueiest of glue guy positions.
Yes, I think all glue guys are really middle relievers who moonlight as a closer for a season or two at heart.
Yeah, strong pick. Okay, if it comes down to the bullpen, you have a guy who's a proven closer, whereas I have a guy who was kind of a setup man for his whole career. Although, funny you bring up J.J. Putz receiving MVP votes. because Arthur Rhodes, before he was a Mariner, but earlier in his career, also got MVP votes, which is just so funny. Like, it also begs the question of why the ballot even goes that far. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he finished 20th in 1997 when he was with the Orioles.
Oh, my goodness. That's honestly the... I can imagine some relievers being, you know, good enough to get, I guess, like, down-ballot MVP votes. I mean, Eric Gagne, when he, won the Cy Young, right? He was so good. I can understand getting the adulation there, but I don't know. Was Arthur Rhodes just that good? And I, you know, only think of him as the guy who got yelled at by and got ejected because he wouldn't take off his earring during play.
Eric Gagne, yeah, he did win the Cy Young. I'm looking at a list now. Dennis Eckersley won one. Raleigh Fingers. It's an interesting list, but yeah, there's no way that Arthur Rhodes should have gotten any votes. I think that was very, very foolish by the voters in 1997, especially because he only had one save. So he must have been doing like an Andrew Miller kind of thing where he was like pitching multiple innings a lot. He did throw 95 innings in 53 games. So yeah, it seems like he was doing a lot of long outings, but, and I'm sure the Orioles were good that year too, 97. Actually, last year they beat the Mariners in the playoffs, so Arthur Rhodes, a lot of layers to my Arthur Rhodes choice here. He factors in to Mariners history in many different ways.
There are a lot of layers to Arthur Rhodes in general. I'm looking at his baseball reference page, and I have to imagine he's got to be one of, if not the oldest player to ever make their All-Star Game debut. Because he did so in 2010 at the age of 40 while pitching for the Cincinnati Reds.
That's awesome. I have more news for you. Not only did Raleigh Fingers and Dennis Eckersley both win Cy Youngs, they also both won MVPs. Raleigh Fingers won the MVP in 1981, and Dennis Eckersley won it in 1992 when he was old. Like, he was, I think, pretty past his prime by then. The 92 MVPs are Dennis Eckersley, so, like, okay, weird. And then Barry Bonds, who you're like, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay, weird, and okay, good.
Yeah. So, yeah, Arthur Rhodes, sorry you only finished 20th. You can be on my team. Where did J.J. Putz finish? Do you have that in front of you?
I believe I just closed his page. I believe he finished 13th. He got 4 points in the voting, so I imagine it's, nice. Like one like sixth place vote or something.
This is not
he
important.
Was, he was just right in between Grady Sizemore and CC Sabathia on the list here.
Oh hell yeah. This is not important, but I forgot that Arthur Rhodes came back to the Mariners in 2008 as a 38-year-old and was still pretty decent. I mean, not anywhere close to his prime, but was a useful pitcher for a very long time, and then won the World Series in his final year. He was one of those guys who, in 2011, he pitched for both teams that ended up in the World Series, so he would have got a ring no matter what. That's a glue guy move.
Ooh. That is a peak glue guy move. You're always part of a winning culture no matter what ends up happening.
And even better, he finished for the team that won, so he got to celebrate, too.
Well, and he gets the champagne shower. Yeah, not bad. Well, speaking of teams that won, I'm going to go with the exact opposite for my player at shortstop and take a guy that I had truly never heard of. Craig Reynolds is my shortstop, so come on down, Mr. Reynolds. He was the Seattle Mariners All-Star in 1978. He put up 2.7 wins above replacement. He was basically a league average hitter who, I guess, played good defense. But again, I knew very little about him going into this, and I don't feel bad about that. He was, you know, early on Mariner, then immediately after 78, went to the Astros, was an All-Star again, but never actually approached his peak of just barely being a league average hitter ever again. So he clearly did not quite have the slugging to make it, but he had a nice long, you know, fringe starter career. With the Astros, actually, for another decade. So, you know, that's going to be the guy that is definitely going to be providing a lot of glue at shortstop. I know nothing about him, but he was an All-Star, and there aren't that many good shortstops who played full seasons there.
Yeah, no, strong pick. Him and Vizquel were the only people I listed at shortstop, and I actually had to kind of scramble to find Carlos Guillen because I realized that I didn't prepare enough. But yeah, Reynolds was pretty good. I mean, I, like you, had never heard of him. It's hilarious to me that he was an all-star. Like, to be a truly anonymous all-star is great. That's like a very funny existence to have. And 99 WRC plus, so technically just below league average, but also enough to be probably the best hitter on the Mariners, I would imagine, if he made the all-star team.
Yeah, it's pretty sad, but you know, I guess the Mariners were looking for any starter they could. The other shortstop I considered was actually Ketel Marte, who put up a surprisingly good half season his rookie year. In just 57 games, he was worth 2.2 wins.
Yep, and it doesn't matter who I take because it won't affect your team at all. I get to kind of have some fun here. I need a second baseman and a starting pitcher, and then I also need my left fielder. So I just know that I have three slots left. I know that I haven't mentioned my second baseman yet, so I'm going to take him now. It's a guy that I think is actually kind of hated by Mariner fans, but I remember liking him, and in this season he was pretty good. So I'm going to take 2006 Jose Lopez for my second baseman. 2006 Jose Lopez was a legitimately good player. There's no debating that in 2006 specifically, he was useful. I mean, I won't say he was great. Obviously, that's the whole point of this draft. But to hit 282 over a full big league season, I'll take that. His B war has a huge difference from his F war, which I think is also very funny. According to Baseball Reference, he was worth 2.8 wins. And I put in my notes, big difference, but did not write down what he actually put up on Fangraphs. So I'm going to pull that up now. But it's also one of the funny parts of doing this is you have some guys who, by one publication, were much better than they were on the other one, especially catchers. Like, the difference there is pretty astronomical. But for Lopez, okay. Come on, Fangraphs. I know that Fangraphs is going through a tough time. There we go. Okay. Yeah, Jose Lopez was a 1.4 win player by Fangraphs and 2.8 by Baseball Reference. So there was something there. It must have been his defense. You know, I don't know what the formula is for each of them, but there's a massive gulf there. But I'm going to trust B-War in this situation and decide that Jose Lopez is about as close as you can get to being too good for this team without actually reaching that threshold, and add him to the squad. He also led the AL in sack bunts, and there's nothing more glue guy than giving up your at-bat for the good of the team. So Jose Lopez, I feel like, will be a divisive pick. People will probably tell me that I picked the spawn of Satan or whatever, but for 2006 specifically, he was fine. I want that on the record. There was nothing wrong with Jose Lopez in 2006. So that leaves me needing my left fielder and starting pitcher. I want to save the starting pitcher for the end. It's going to be kind of my grand finale. I have someone in mind who I have a clear path to taking now. So for my left fielder, I feel like, just from a personal standpoint, I want another old school guy. My team is mostly modern, with the exception of 1982 Al Cowens. I think Al Cowens needs a friend. So I'm actually going to take someone from that very same year. Shouts to 1982, and go with Dave Henderson to man my final outfield spot.
Nice.
Yeah, 23 years old. Probably the youngest member of my team, I would imagine. Only got 362 plate appearances, so didn't really play a full season. And he played center field that year, but I'm going to slot him in left field, adding to my tremendous defense. The offense is fine. Nothing really to speak of. But Dave Henderson, I remember when he was in the booth as an announcer, I really liked him too. So I want that sort of that spirit. He had a really cool voice, which I feel like people would want to hear in the dugout and in the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. And I think that the value of that is going to go beyond the box score, you know, and really amplify the team in a lot of ways that aren't seen in raw statistics.
I like that you've gone youth with each of your last two picks. I think actually Jose Lopez is younger than Henderson. He was only 22 in 06. So you've got the youth movement coming in here.
I did not realize that. Thank you for pointing that out, that two of my last picks are younger than I am right now. That's really inspiring.
Well, again, if I had taken Ketel Marte, I would have had somebody that was born on the exact same day as I am. So really, in another lifetime, I am Ketel Marte.
That's right. I always forget about that. What a fun, useless tidbit about you.
Yep. I have produced a whole lot fewer wins above replacement than Ketel Marte has. But on the bright side, I have not had a negative WAR season. So really, who's to say who's providing more or less value?
That's a great point. Yeah, Ketel Marte could take a lesson from you in doing nothing.
Yep, I've always said this, and I'm glad that someone else is finally listening.
All right, time for your final pick then. Who do you want to play the all-important center field position on the Seattle Grants?
I will say I was kind of disappointed by the center field options. There weren't that many players that were at the right level who played most of their season in center field. So I'm going to go with a more recent pick, and that is going to be the 2012 version of Michael Saunders. The 2014 version of Saunders was better. That's the year he had a 128 OPS plus. However, he was not really playing center field at that point. He only played in 12 games that year in center and played the bulk of his season in right field. So we're going to go with 2012 version, the 25-year-old Condor. And that year he was, you know, perfectly fine. 108 OPS plus, you know, walked a little bit, didn't, you know, maybe struck out a little more than you'd like. But he was worth 2.5 wins, and I think he's going to be a nice fit in between Stan Javier and Jay Buhner, which I got to say, like, I really would have loved to go for Goody compared to these guys. This outfield could be in a little bit of trouble here defensively.
Yeah, exactly. You really stuck your flag in the ground as team offense. I mean, Kyle Seager was pretty good, but that, again, is young Kyle Seager. He doesn't know all the ropes yet. You have old Joey Cora at second base, who I doubt had much of an arm. And then Craig Reynolds, I mean, truly, it's anyone's guess. Did they even have defense back then? I don't think so.
And John Olerud. I got John Olerud, so I have to guess that the batting helmet is going to help at least a little bit out in the field compared to a first baseman whose head is exposed to the elements.
Wow, yeah, so true. Russell Branyan is just wearing a hat, which is going to affect things probably negatively on my end, but that's a risk I'm willing to take.
Smart. All right, that's
my pick.
All right,
then, that's your team. We, I think, almost definitely went out of order, like you mentioned, because I still have one more pick to make. But it didn't really end up mattering because we never overlapped. After the first couple picks, we kind of had taken the person that the other person needed to take. So this is an inconsequential pick, and I ended up with the guy I wanted anyway, because I think as far as glue guys, actual production, and just kind of a funny pick, this guy is the full package. I have no idea how his advanced numbers came out this good, because looking at his just raw numbers, they're very, very whelming. They're not really overwhelming or underwhelming. They're just kind of blah. But, you know, Grant, I think in a situation like this, it's important to break down the keys to the game, right? The key to any game is to pitch well, hit well, and play good defense. And the man who's been telling us that on TV for years, the one and only Bill Kruger, is going to be my final pick. He's going to take the ball as my starting pitcher. 1991 Bill Kruger, thank you for everything that you've done, and welcome to my team. He had a 2.9 BWAR, so like exactly as good as I'd want someone to be without being too good for this team. 114 ERA plus, but like I said, his raw numbers, not good at all. He only struck out 91 hitters in 175 innings and also walked 60 guys. So per nine innings, he was striking out 4.7 and walking 3.1. That's not good. And his whip was 1.45. So people were getting on base, too. It wasn't like he was just getting really lucky with BABIP. Like, I guess guys were on base and he just was able to wiggle out of it almost every single time. But Bill Kruger, yeah, I didn't know a lot about his playing career. I only really know him from TV. Did you know that he only pitched in Seattle for 2 years? I kind of figured that since he was on TV, that he was like a lifer, but it was only 2 seasons with the Mariners. Did you know that?
I only knew that because I briefly considered him before kind of looking at some of the numbers and being, I think, truly properly whelmed. But I thought he was much more of a Mariners, you know, staple, just given how much we see him on TV. But I guess you really just need to be kind of from the Northwest and have, you know, been or in and around or even have heard of the Seattle Mariners to become a Mariners TV legend.
Exactly. And once you took 2018 Marco, for me it was between his teammate 2018 Wade LeBlanc or Bill Kruger. And the way that this draft broke down, I thought Bill Kruger would be a great cap on the end of this. So that's my team. That's my final guy. Before we do a little recap and we remind everyone who we picked, let's go through some honorable mentions, some guys we left on the board. Who was your hardest cut, the guy you really wanted to take but couldn't end up taking?
Mark McLemore. And that's because Mark McLemore is the epitome of a glue guy, but his 0-1 season was too good to be included, and his 0-2 season, he was only worth, you know, about a win and a half, and he just wasn't really at the level, and so I decided to go with Stan Javier instead. But, you know, it's hard to make a glue guy team of the Mariners without including Mark McLemore.
Yeah, I agree. That was my discovery, was that Mark McLemore in his good years was too good, and in his bad years was too bad. That's kind of the same situation for, like, Willie Bloomquist, Charles Gibson, guys like that. They were never actually good enough to warrant using a pick on them as much as I wanted to. You're totally right about center field also. Very, 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 very bad group. Gerard Dyson, though, got some consideration. He was worth 2.7 wins in 2017, despite not really hitting at all. And same with Jeremy Reed in 2005.
Yeah. I was so sure Jeremy Reed was going to be a star.
I think a lot of us were. And he was, I think, the one guy on my board who was, like, actually bad. Like, he had this one year that was okay, but he was never at any point, I would say, good.
No, absolutely not.
And then I also like how we kind of had this unspoken thing where neither of us took Nelson Cruz or Robinson Cano in any of their sort of underperforming seasons, because we, I guess, unspokenly decided that they were too good to be glue guys. So I respected that that never happened, because I was worried you were going to take one of them with your first pick.
No, that felt like truly violating the spirit of the rules. That's, you know, Lee McPhail saying that George Brett's pine tar did not violate the spirit of the rules, but the exact opposite, because, you know, this would have been truly just, it feels truly wrong to put Robinson Cano or Nelson Cruz on a glue guy team. I think that would really fracture team chemistry.
Exactly. Yeah, well, I'm glad that we were on the same mental wavelength there. So to recap, my team started with Tom Murphy, the catcher from 2019, as my very first pick. The rest of the infield is 2009 Russell Branyan, 2006 Jose Lopez, and then Carlos Guillen playing out of position slightly at third base, although I think he can handle it. That's 2003 Carlos Guillen. Then we have 93 Omar Vizquel at shortstop, and in the outfield, the corners are two guys from 1982, Dave Henderson and Al Cowens, and then between them, 2010 Franklin Gutierrez, one of the better defenders the Mariners have ever had. DH is 2008 Raul Ibanez. My starting pitcher, the man with the keys to the game, is Bill Krueger from 1991. And behind him, if he needs help, is Arthur Rhodes from 01 as my only relief pitcher. Grant, you took Dan Wilson from 95 as your catcher. Your infield is 2003 John Olerud, 1997 Joey Cora, young Kyle Seager from 2012 playing third base, 1978 Craig Reynolds as your mystery man at shortstop. And then your truly, truly iconic outfield, 01 Stan Javier in the last year of his career, 2012 Michael Saunders, when I think a lot of us thought he was going to be a real player, 94 Jay Buhner, maybe the most star of anyone on this team, but I guess it was his defense that made him not cross the 3-win threshold and thus put him on the glue guy team. And then your DH, Bruce Bochy from 1980, as long as you can find him and he hasn't wandered into the forest. And then Marco Gonzalez from 2018 and J.J. Putz from 2006 as your two pitchers. Really just a tremendous group of guys. Just saying those names was fun, and attaching all the memories to them was probably my favorite part of doing all of this. So, Grant, thank you for playing along. And you mentioned that we could maybe do some out-of-the-park baseball sims for this, if possible. Please do that, and we'll keep everyone updated on the comments for this post. But I would love to see how this plays out, both in one game, also a 7-game series, and then if possible, a full season. This would be a lot of fun to see whose glue guy team turns out to be the most average. That would be the goal, right, is going exactly 500 with this team?
Yeah, I think what we should do is either do a 7-game series or just a 162-game season, either against other teams or just against each other, and they play 162 times. With fatigue, you know, turned off between games, so that the starting pitcher just starts every single game. And I think the goal would be, you know, if both teams could go 81 and 81, I think we would really have achieved something special in Mariners fandom history.
Absolutely. I think we should do that. Putting them against each other will be the most fun option and seeing, you know, it'd be really funny if one team ends up being wildly superior, but it'd also be even more funny if they were exactly the same and just canceled out over an entire season.
Yeah, I will say my last plug here, Craig Reynolds, if you are listening to this podcast, please say something. Please let us know who you are. We want to celebrate you and recognize that you are a very good Mariners legend, really. So, you know, Gordon Craig Reynolds, if that is truly your full name, which Baseball Reference says it is, hit us up on Lookout Landing.
Yeah, please. And if any of our commenters remember watching Craig Reynolds, we would love to hear any of your stories, because not only is he kind of lost in name recognition, like he never comes up in the, like, you know, Mariners history, great forgotten guys or anything like that, but we also don't really have much footage of him, I feel like. You know, 1978, kind of a lost year. There's not, like, game footage on YouTube. You know, you'd have to have, like, a true memorable highlight in order to have anything live on, and he didn't seem to have that as, you know, a glue guy.
And what's also great about our man Craig is that after the 78 season, we traded him to the Astros for Floyd Bannister.
Oh, look at that. So he helped the team in a lot of ways then. Thank you, Craig Reynolds, for all your service.
Oh, man. Well, Matthew, this is a good time. I think we got some good glue guys picked, and I think these teams would both get summarily stomped by our all-time team.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think we've carved out a niche, too, as great team drafters in Mariner podcast history. That'll be our legacy. We're the glue guys of drafting teams of ex-Mariners from individual seasons with the hopes of both beating each other and creating hilarious team chemistry. That's your title, right?
Raise the banner, fly the flag, start the parade. Like, we've done it, Matthew. We've reached the pinnacle.
We have. So please let us know who you would have picked. Yell at us if you think we did a terrible job. Praise us if you think we did a great job. Read Lookout Landing. We got some stuff. Obviously, there's not a lot to write about, but we're trying our best to give you guys content. Grant, what's your Twitter handle? Let the people know where they can follow you.
You can follow me at G Bronston on Twitter. I'm now typing that in to make sure that is my Twitter handle. But it is. So, and if it's not, I'll change it to that. So at G Bronston on Twitter. I'm going to try to get some out-of-the-park baseball season recaps out here soon. So look for a replay of the 2001 season where I try to win 117 games.
Oh, that's a great idea. I will definitely look forward to that. I have no idea what the next thing I will write is going to be, but read my old stuff. The Unsung Heroes thing took a lot of time to research and write, so I would love if you gave that a look. Follow me on Twitter at mroberson22. And as always, please like and subscribe. I actually don't know if you can like podcasts. So just subscribe and give us a good rating, I guess. That's the podcast equivalent of liking. Thank you to everyone who's sticking out the pandemic with us. We're trying to give you guys some levity and hope we've done that. So until the next version of whatever this podcast will be, goodbye.
Bye.
Vegetable bolt cutters. I've been in here too long. Fetch the bolt cutters. I've been in here too long. Fetch the bolt cutters. I've been in here too long. Fetch the bolt cutters.